Hi, is Eddie your alcoholic? Very alcoholic. I'm nervous, of course. Let's see. I guess I can begin at the beginning. I was the youngest of four in my family. My brothers and sisters are much older than I was. They were all overachievers, I guess, the best sportsmen and the best this. And then I came along and wanted to be like they were. By the time they'd gone away, my brothers left for college when I was just, my oldest brother was, I was about five when he left for college and ended up being by myself pretty much most of my life. My mother was a horrible alcoholic. She didn't drink when the other kids were there, but I always, since I was born late in life, I always figured it was my fault that I drove her to drink. And I was kind of an only child. It was really tough living with an alcoholic mother, which I'm sure some of you have had that experience. My father left our home when he bought a ranch and moved out there because he couldn't deal with her anymore. And back then, that was in the 50s, and alcoholics, we hid mom, you know, they couldn't be seen, and we were a prominent family, and so we had to keep mom hidden. And dad pretty much paid me off to stay with her. And I had to babysit her. She would, you know, get in the car and drive to the neighbor's yard, and I was like 10 years old, and I'd have to go retrieve the car out of the yard and stuff like that. And I resented her very much for the way she was. She embarrassed me. All my friends, as I got older, came over to my house because even when I wasn't there, because mom would cook for them, and it was her party house because there were no rules, you know, at my house. I swore I would never drink. I would never be like her. I went in high school. I don't remember my first drink. It was pretty early. I ran around with. I pretty much raised myself, so I was very mature for my age. Probably around 12, I think. I was running around with, at that time, were some good friends of my family's parents, because their girls were older. Ran around with them, and they were partiers. And I started smoking cigarettes because they were smoking joints, and they looked my face, and it made me mad, so I decided I was going to get back, so I started smoking cigarettes. And that was a bad thing to do. I'm still smoking. And I wish I'd never done that. Anyway, I drank beer a little bit around them just to be one of, you know, to be accepted because I was a little kid that was running around with these high school people, and I didn't like the taste of it. It just didn't do much for me. I was drank on the weekends with them. As I got a little older, I drank pretty much to be, you know, just because I had to have a beer in my hand to be cool, you know, around them. I got married when I was 8. I was molested. When I was 15, I was raped. The reason I tell that part of my story is because it influenced my drinking later on. I got married very early. I was just turned 17. I think pretty much the reason I wanted out of the house for that is to get away from my mom. I was tired of taking care of her. By then, dad had moved her up to Lima Cove up on a hill, so she couldn't get in trouble, and she'd still run the car off the mountain, and it was a mess all the time. And I remember one time I got a call at 3 in the morning, and she had me run up there, and I was like 17, and she said there was a snake, and I went up there, and she had beat this rattlesnake with a hoe, to death and turned it inside out. And I go, you called me to go all the way up there to the snake that you just turned inside out. And, but it was just full of stuff like that. When I got married, I was extremely shy in the sex area, shall we say, because of my experiences. What sex meant to me was police, and the look on my dad's face when he found out what had happened, my rape I could not tell about. It was a family friend, and I had to keep that a secret. It was very frightening to me, and it just wasn't a good thing. My husband was 3 years older, and of course that was a big important thing to him. So in order to please him, I found that somehow somebody gave me a glass of wine, and he was a beer drinker, and it just did it. That just something went off. I had a glass of red wine, and it went down very smooth, and all of a sudden I felt okay. I continued to drink the wine on the weekends, and I was a hearty Burgundy drinker. By the gallon, I supported Gallo for many years. That was my drug of choice. So I was around 30. I had my children at 21. I didn't drink when they were born. I couldn't wait till I finished breastfeeding so I could have my glass of wine. I wanted to be that perfect mother. I did everything for them. I was a 20 mom. I did the PTA. I did everything I was supposed to do until after dinner. And then it was my turn because I'd done my duty. It was my turn to have my glass of wine. And sometimes I would, I'd have a couple glasses, and then my husband would want to go to bed, and I just need one more glass, and that's how it started. I felt like I owed myself. You know, I had done everything that was expected of me. I was a great mom. I was a good wife, and I wanted that glass of wine. I wanted to sleep. I didn't sleep well. Anyway, I'm very, very hyper. But that was my excuse at that time. I didn't know, during my mom's drinking, she died when I was 21 years old. I was 8 months pregnant with my daughter. She never got to see my grandkids. She died of brain. If any of you have ever seen that kind of death, it's pretty gruesome. One time I went by her house when I was 18, and she was laying on the floor bleeding from every orifice that she had. And I called the doctor, and he would not help her because he said, I told her to quit drinking, and I'm not going to help her anymore. And that's pretty tough on an 18-year-old kid. After that, she ended up going to a home, and she ended up dying. She could not quit drinking. Never was AA ever mentioned in my household. Alcoholic was never mentioned in my household. I didn't know anything about the program. And today I am so happy to see so many young people and to see AA being talked about very freely. I'm very, very open with my alcoholism. If anybody wants to know, I'm glad to tell them. I'm an alcoholic, and if you need help, call me. I have no qualms at all about who knows I'm an alcoholic. I went to, when I was about 30, I was introduced to the white form of alcohol, which encouraged my drinking and made me a little bit more, by that time, we're very established in business. I had what I thought was my dream life. I had a wonderful husband, two great kids, two businesses, beautiful home, everything I ever wanted. And for some reason, that wasn't, I was missing something. I wasn't sure what it was. And then I think when my drinking kept, I kept drinking a little bit more, and then I started sneaking. And I don't know when I turned the corner. I have no idea. Pretty soon it was like I was looking for, I'd call friends or anybody that would drink with me so I could drink. I would have parties for just as it was Wednesday and have people over just so it was okay for me to drink because my husband didn't want me drinking by myself. So that's what I started doing, and I had some great parties, but it was just too much. It was just too much. When I started the other stuff, it got out of control. I did some really stupid things, and we ended up getting a divorce in 1990, and I went absolutely berserk. I thought, it's over. What have I done? You know, I couldn't have been that bad. And I didn't think I was then. I thought I was taking care of business. I look back at it now, and I'm going, oh, brother. You know, that some of the stuff I was doing, it was just insane. And I was in shock. I've been with this man since I was 15, and I just didn't know what to do. I got into the alcohol and the white stuff, and it was on. It was just on. I finally got a job, and I met this guy. I walked into a bar. I wasn't a bar drinker. I was at a home drinker. I didn't want my parents or my father to know. My dad was my savior all through all this. I wanted him to be proud of me. I wanted him to look at me like he did my brothers, you know. I wanted to do good. He was so proud of me and our life we had, and then all of a sudden, you know, it was gone. And I had no idea he knew what was going on. I thought he hid it very, very well. I never got arrested. I don't know how. I met this guy. I walked into a bar one night, and my daughter told me, she said, you need to quit crying. You need to get out of here. Walked in, and he was a bouncer in the bar, much younger, and a dealer, and how perfect. And it was on again, and I was just completely out of control. I did that for 2 years until he started beating me and trying to hide. Trying to hide everything. I went through the paranoia, you know, to keep the doors shut. And I went to work every day, and then came straight back home, and everything was, I was afraid. I was afraid all the time. And the last time he tried to kill me, I said, this is it, I'm done. And I blamed it on the drugs. Had nothing to do with the alcohol. It was surely the drugs that had ruined my life. That was in 1995, and put those down and never ever even thought about it again. The alcohol, on the other hand, I moved to Visalia, and I had a friend that had a nasty apartment on Santa Fe, and down in the back of Santa Fe, and I hid there from this man so he wouldn't find me. I was in the upstairs, and I had my gallon of Hardy Burgundy with me all the time. I was afraid. There was heroin dealers underneath me, and I go to work and come back, and again, I was alone. I was afraid, and I get set up on a blind date, I said, okay, I can go, and I thought, well, you got to stay sober enough to go. And so this guy pulls up, and I mean, I'm in the seediest part of Santa Fe, and he pulls up in this Jaguar, and when he called me, I said, well, you better bring your 9mm or whatever, you know, and trying to explain to him where I lived, and so anyway, he pulls up in this beautiful Jaguar, and I thought, yes, and he puts me in the car, and there was this 9mm gun, and I go, I was just kidding. So So anyway, he was a very, very nice guy. He goes, "What the hell are you doing in a place like this?" And I said, "I'm hiding." And he said, "We got to get you out of here." I was with him for a few minutes. He did move me out to a nicer place in Santa Fe, but at least it was down the street. And I was with him about 6 months, probably. He was in and out of town, and it's just a perfect arrangement. You know, he wasn't here all the time, and had a great time when he was, and finest wines and restaurants, and I thought, ooh, life is good. And until I got a phone call from his wife. And wasn't happy about that. Had no idea he was married. And people say, "Hey, how could you not know that I was good?" He was very good. So that night I proceeded to get just shipping. And I got my car, which I rarely did. And I went again. I thought, "Where can I go? Where can I go?" And I remembered a friend of mine was bartending at the Santa Fe bar. And I'll go to Santa Fe. So I went down there, and I met this other, there's some friends of mine there, and they introduced me to this old gentleman there. And he took one look at me, and he goes, "I think you need something to eat." And I said, "That'd be a good idea." And I ended up with that wonderful gentleman. He took me under his wing, and he said, "There's nothing wrong with you." He said, "It's that red stuff you drink. It's got all that sediment in it. That's what's wrong with you." So he said, "You got to drink whiskey, or you need to drink white wine. And that's your whole problem." So so I had to get rid of my Hardy Burgundy. And I know that's when the stock dropped on Gallo, I'm sure of it. So I started drinking. I could not drink whiskey. Anything brown reminded me of my mother. I could smell of her breath. I could still, it would bring back memories. It'd just stand the hair up on my neck. I'm still that way to this day. I just couldn't handle hard liquor. So I drank white wine and a lot of it. And in 1997, he was suddenly killed in a car accident. He was hit by head on by a semi. And once again, I thought, "What have I done? What, you know, life just sucks. I'm not ever going to be happy, and that's just the way it's going to be." And I started drinking really, really heavy. And at work, I still had the same job. I don't know how I still had the same job. The only time I didn't go to work during this time is when I was shaking too bad to get my nose hair on. Other than that, I went to work every day throughout most of the time and stuff. But if I couldn't get my nose hair on, I knew I had to call in sick. And it started getting more often and more often and more often. My boss at that time had mentioned to one of the girls that I smelled like alcohol. And I remembered she mentioned it to me, and I thought, "Oh, I can't lose my job." So she said, so I remember somebody said, "If you drink vodka, they can't smell it." So not being a hard alcohol drinker ever, I decided that's what I would do, because I needed to sleep. And I had all these problems, don't you know, and I wanted to be numb. I did not want to think. I was miserable. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I just wanted to hide. And so I started drinking vodka. And a lot of it. And it took me, he died in January of 1997. On May 6th of 1997, I called my sister. And I was in on a 3-day binger. My stomach had started to grow a little and little. And I told them at work that, because I knew it, and my mom died of cirrhosis, and she also had the extended stomach, and I knew my stomach was growing, but I wasn't the same as my mom. My mom never worked. My mom read books all the time, and that's why she was a drunk. I had a job always, even when I had my own business. I would never read a book, because in my head, that meant you were lazy and you would drink. So I never read. I saw my stomach growing, and I would not admit to myself that there was anything wrong. And I think deep inside, I was hoping that I would die. I was too chicken to commit suicide, so I was just hoping they'd all be over. I just wanted it to be over. And on May 6th, I called my sister. I'd been on a three-dayer. I called in work, and my stomach got huge. I had not eaten for a month. I would eat some crackers and stuff. I couldn't get anything down. And if I did, it wouldn't stay. I called her, and I was in so much pain. I had a bottle of vodka, and I kept trying to drink it, and it would just come right back out. I couldn't even swallow the alcohol anymore. She walked in and saw me, the condition I was in. I was bright yellow. They rushed me down to the doctor's office, and there happened to be a liver specialist in the building at the time, and he came in there. He left real fast. He came back in, and they started sticking needles in my stomach and draining all of this liquid out. I had these are city bursitis. I should learn since I had the damn thing, but I was dying. They drained as much as they could out of me at the time. I turned completely black, my whole stomach and everything, because I was malnourished. I was dehydrated. I had suicide at the city. It just affected my stomach. My stomach was so huge you could see the veins. It was ready to burst open. I was pretty bad, pretty bad. My liver shut down, everything was shutting down. They sent me to Fresno to a detox. I was in detox for 10 days. I don't remember it. They put me out. I don't know. I don't remember saying. I remember the last couple of days I was there. My sister came to see me. They let my children in to say goodbye. They said I would not leave that place. My blood numbers and stuff, they said when I left there, they'd never seen anyone that was that sick that did not leave in body bag. And I don't know why God spared my life at that time. I have no idea. My sister said, do you need help or do you want help? And I said, yes, I do. She sent me to pay for a rehab, a 30-day rehab. I ended up being there for 45, 50 days, I think, because I was in and out of the hospital while I was there. I went in there, and they brought a specialist in to see me. They take me to Fresno one other time to get, they start taking me every other day to get drained. And they start pulling out blood and everything else. It was pretty horrifying. I was all right with it. I had asked God when he said you have 3 months to live, and there's nothing we can do. I took it all right. The only thing I asked was please, let me, my daughter was pregnant at the time and was due in September, and I said, please, God, just let me live to see that baby, because I had done exactly what, I'd gone through the same thing that my mother had done to me. Without, when I said I would never, ever be my mother or like want to be like her, it was happening all over again. Different circumstances, I did it a little differently, but it all came around, and it was the same way. I made it. I had done pretty well. Did liver biopsies and stuff, and I was getting better. My doctors still to this day call me their miracle child. They have no idea why I'm here. I started getting better. I did everything they told me to do. I was on a very, very strict diet for a year. No sodium, no meat, no, I couldn't have a lot of things. And I learned to do that, and I did exactly what they told me to do, and obviously no alcohol. I got out of there. It took me, I had to get drained for another 6 months, 6 or 7 months, I think, until it finally came down. They did a CT scan or whatever, and they saw something. They told me I'll probably die of liver cancer. They saw a shadow on my liver. They didn't want to tell me, so they sent me in for another liver biopsy. when it came back, what they had found was all new liver growth. My liver has completely come back. I still have cirrhosis, but I have all new liver growth around it. I have a better liver function today than I ever had, ever. And that in itself is a miracle. I stayed sober for 18 months, a few things in 18 months for some reason. I got a wonderful sponsor. When I was in rehab, they carried me to meetings. I did everything they told me. I did the first three steps there. And at that point, I felt like, I don't really need to say I'm an alcoholic. That's pretty obvious. But I did admit I was an alcoholic. And I got out of there, and one of my friends, Carl, took me to Growth 64, I think it was, the meeting there. And then I went to the Tuesday night women's meeting and continued to go. When I first went in, I scared everyone. They thought I was going to die right there because I was pretty yellow still and pretty scary looking. Anyway, I did that diligently. I got a sponsor. I worked the steps. Again, I don't think I worked into the best of my ability because I knew I'd never drink again. Nobody that dies drinks again, right? I mean, you just don't. And that's what I thought. Stayed sober for 18 months. And I remember that so well because I was so pissed they didn't have an 18-month chip. And I wanted an 18-month chip. And I thought, maybe I should, we need to talk to somebody about that. And it was around Christmas time, and I was making cookies, which I do every year at Christmas, and I had a little bit of vanilla left, vanilla extract, and I said, well, I'm not going to throw that away. I have no idea what made me do this. I have no idea there was alcohol in vanilla extract, none. And I didn't want to throw it, so I just drank it. And something happened. It burned when it went down, and it was like, oh, I have no idea what it just set me off. I had no idea what it was, and I thought, wow, I shouldn't do that. Well, I went back and got some vanilla. A week later, the little ones, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to keep that just in case I have one of these bad nights, at the moment I hate everyone at work, and just to get that, that's how it started. And I did that, and then I started getting a little bit bigger bottle. At the time, I started buying vanilla extract, only McCormick. It was 45% alcohol. It was like $6.90 a bottle. By the time I finished my vanilla extract, it was $15 a bottle. I was spending all of my money on vanilla extract. I had filed bankruptcy because of vanilla extract. And people are going, why didn't you just drink alcohol? In my mind, they told me it would kill me. In my mind, I would die if I drank alcohol. My stepmom died, I remember, after my family was so proud of me because I was sober. And she was dead, and look at her, she's alive, and oh, we're so proud. How could I tell them I was drinking it up? I stayed very hidden with that. It's a very unusual thing to have to go to market, like you do from liquor store to liquor store, buying vanilla. Hundreds of dollars worth of vanilla. I had people ask me, do you own a bakery? I remember one time I was horrified because I had like six or seven bottles, the big ones, lined up. And this one little kid, little box boy, I almost killed him, he looked at the back of this as he's boxing, and he goes, oh, look at all the alcohol in this. And I wanted to slap him. Because I thought, what if there's somebody from AA in here? I'm so busted. So I had quit going to meetings. Because this is a program of honesty, and that is what I love about this program. I got honest with myself. I got honest with, and I thought everyone else was absolutely as honest as I was. I could not go to a meeting and say I'm sober and I wasn't. So I quit going to meetings. That just intensified the guilt. That intensified the drinking. That intensified everything. I stayed away from my friends. I didn't want to admit it, you know. My stepmother died in my vanilla craze. And all my family came. And I was the kind that when I had something real important the next day, when you're not supposed to drink the night before and you need to be in top shape, I would drink twice as much. And I didn't mean to, but I did. And so I just didn't get a little bit of vanilla the night before the funeral because all the family's going to be there. And I drank a bottle and a half because I had it in half. And it was sitting there, so you might as well drink. Well, I had the shakes really bad right before I was supposed to go to the funeral. So I ran up to the liquor store. I bought a bottle of vodka just to try to get rid of the shakes. I tried to drink it and came right back. I couldn't swallow it. So I can't remember what excuse I used. Gastritis or something. I told them once when my stomach was growing at work that I had compacted colon, I think I said, and that one of the chefs at work says, yeah, you are full of shit. And I'll always remember that because I would come up with these things, like, where did that come from, you know? As alcoholics, we can come up with a great story when we need to. I drank and drank and drank that vanilla. I got worse and worse, and I did that for the last 2 years. Was horrible, absolutely horrible. I was dumping vanilla bottles. I should have taken them. They're really heavy, so I should have taken them and recycled. I would have made some money back, but I was too afraid, and so I dumped them in all the other people's trash cans. And the things we do is our wine bottles and liquor bottles. And so I, one day, it was July 2003, I had been on my vanilla binger, and I was broke, I was tired, and I had my face in a trash can full of cigarette butts, and I was throwing up. And I thought, I'm sick of this. I am so sick of doing this. I can't do it anymore. And I remembered there was a speaker meeting out on that 264. And I said, okay, that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to go back. The only way I can live is AA. That's the only way I can be happy. I was so happy when I was sober. I was so proud of myself. My family was so proud of me. I was doing so well. Things were going my way. Everything was falling into place. I was doing the next indicated step, and that's for the first time in my life. And I was doing it on my own. And I was just, everything was good. I wanted that back really bad. So I get my car, and that Saturday, and I was scared to death. I didn't want to face all of you again and have to say, you know, I didn't know it. But I knew I had to get honest. And so I drove back to that meeting, and there wasn't anybody there. And I thought, oh my God, I got the nerve, I drove out there, and there's no one there. That speaker meeting's always there. And so I got in my car, and I said, okay, God doesn't want me to get sober. I'm sure that, you know, otherwise, why would he not have the meeting there? So he took up my time. And I get in my car and I leave and I go, no, I think God really wants you to get sober. So I drove to the Alana and I thought, I've got to go somewhere. I'm ready to go to a meeting. I've got to go somewhere. And I drove to the Alana and I said, what the heck happened to the speaker meeting? And they go, oh, well, you must have just missed it. It starts in 15 minutes or whatever. And I go, oh, I was early. So I said, okay. So I go get in the car and I go back out there and there's all people. You know, they'd all gone to dinner or something. Somebody was in town. I don't know. But anyway, all the people were there. And I walked into that meeting, and I was greeted. And everyone said, oh, we're so glad to see you back. And where have you been? One day they said, I thought you died. And I said, no, I should have, but no, I didn't die. And I had a lot of people say, I guess people were covering for me, say I moved and stuff like that. But anyway, I was welcomed back. I got a 24-hour shift and a big book again, and I was very, very happy. Very happy to be back. My sobriety date is July 29th, 03, and I hope that is my very, very last sobriety date. By the grace of God, I'm done. I'm done. I ran the gamut. I lived drunk. I lived sober. And I sure like sober a whole lot better. I came back, started going to my meetings again. I got a new sponsor. I worked the steps, and I worked them very carefully this time. I didn't take any of them before because surely I would not drink again. You just don't know. You just don't know. You think you won't drink again, and all it takes is that one sip of vanilla to set it off. And that's what happened to me. I worked the steps, had a wonderful sponsor. She ended up moving away. I don't call my new sponsor as much as I should, but in fact, rarely. I'm working on that. I got into another relationship, and kind of, I went to my, every Tuesday night I went to my meetings. I didn't miss those, but neglected the rest of my my service work, my readings, and I just recently broke up with him, and it's back to get back to basics. I find that when I'm not working a program, I get self-centered, and then I go, oh, poor me, and that will do nothing but, oh, pour me another drink. I don't want to ever be there again. The program has taught me how to live, happily. You have to do the footwork. You have to make the first steps. You have to make the first phone call. That's something I didn't like to do before. But in order to be happy, in order to be sober, that's what you have to do. And you have to work with others. I've enjoyed so much. I went to the rehab. Well, they had that for a while, the Cypress, and worked with people in there trying to get sober. And that is so very, very rewarding. And it so reminded me of where I was and where I never want to go again. Let's see. I'm doing well today, other than just trying to get back, and I'd like to get back into H&I and help other alcoholics. And I think that's about all I got. Okay. Oh, sure. I look just like I used to when I go by the yellow wine and stuff. And today I don't look with, ooh, I wish I had you. Today I see where it took me. And to me it's just bad. It's bad. It's just like such a poison to me. I instantly see myself with my face in that trash can with those cigarette butts. That's what I see now. Yeah.
I don't know, Jessica, I just want to thank you for the vanilla, because I give my significant other a hard time about the mouthwash. Uh-huh. The one without alcohol, of course, costs more, uh-huh. You know, and I know it could set something up. It's like, you know what I mean, just when you do it and swallow it. Mm-hmm. So thank you for this. That just confirms that I don't need to mess with
it. It's so good to me.
Thank you.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. If I do make them, usually I have somebody around me, but I buy the little one, and if there's some left, it goes down the drain. I do so make cookies. You know, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. I think vanilla extract does. I don't know about the other ones. I only drink McCormick. It was insane. I remember one Christmas, all the stores were closed, and I finally found one little bottle in some little Mexican market on the north side that was covered with dust, and it was like $7. And I bought it anyway, and that's all I could find in the town, and that's how addicted I was to it. It's insane. Absolutely insanity where it took me. Yes. No, I quit paying my bills. I was spending probably anywhere, I was buying at least $4 to $6, at $15 a piece. That's what I drink a day. And it was at the end, yeah, it's pretty expensive. I quit paying my bills. I just spent it all on that. It had cigarettes. Yes. You know, I got very, very lucky. I got sick, of course, thrown up sick. And it before, I don't know why it didn't do anything. Because I do have liver. I go in for all my blood work twice a year now. And I have no ill effects. And why, I don't know. Again, the doctors have no idea. There's just, I meant to be here for some reason, and I don't know what it is yet, but I can't wait to find out. Yes, John. Yes, they still make pomegranate jelly. There's no vanilla in that. Yes.
Oh, sure.
No, I get drunk as stuff. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was just a little bit, and I was just bold. I mean, worse than any of the wine. The wine's like, what, 18%? And that's 45%. And drinking it straight. I just drank it out of the bottle. You know, I didn't even, or I guess you don't put vanilla in it. But, you know, I had them under everything. I had them everywhere. I had them hidden, you know, in case my kids came over. You know, they were everywhere. No, but I did have one grocery guy go, I get all paranoid. He goes, you know, they used to make perfume out of this. And I'm thinking, oh, shit, you know, we smell like vanilla. You know, I was all worried about that. But they make a lot of, I guess it must have smelled like a good drunk. I don't know. No, I still won't read. I do a lot of other things. I keep very, very busy. But I'm still afraid to read. Maybe that'll be the next thing I need to work on.
Thank you.